Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, it's Phantasmo After Dark. Our double feature tonight, Dracula vs. Frankenstein and Werewolves on Wheels. We are your hosts, Rob Floyd and Tony Mercer.
So once upon a time, Rob Floyd told me...
It's all my fault.
...that I was not complete. I was not a man, even, until I'd endured Dracula vs. Frankenstein.
In its entirety in one sitting.
So we sat long ago in the VHS days... And we watched Dracula vs. Frankenstein, and, well, it gave me a headache. It was a cinematic endurance test of the highest order. But watch it I did, and survive it.
Yes, you did.
And I emerged from that experience a man. So tell me, how did it come to pass, sir?
that I actually watched it once?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was one of those things that I'd seen pictures of it forever in Famous Monsters. Even that one issue has Xandor Vorkov on the cover is the Mike Brady Dracula.
You mean Xandor Vorkov?
Yeah. God, the most god-awful Dracula you've ever seen. with that Mike Brady hair, the goatee, and the dime store fangs. And it's great because when he does his Dracula voice, all of a sudden his face is completely white with dark black circles.
Brady hair.
Well, it does.
The perm era.
The perm era Mike Brady, yeah. With that dime store, you know, plastic cape and the fangs. Oh, it's a sight to behold. But seeing pictures of this forever in Famous Monsters, and Fari was supposed to be in the movie, had to find this film. And then, which wasn't that long ago, I guess, films weren't as readily available on VHS, especially more obscure films, unless you went to a convention and got a bootleg, which I did with many films that I couldn't find back then. But I found this, I can't remember where I bought it, but on VHS, and I still have it. And it wasn't the Troma release. Troma later released it. And finally got to see it. And it was everything I could hope for and less.
I think that's a pretty common story that you hear with Dracula versus Frankenstein, is that folks learned about it via Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine because Fori Akerman was pimping it because Fori Akerman was in it.
Exactly.
And so everyone excitedly, well, I don't know if you excitedly run out to see it, but tracked it down and saw it somewhere or another only to say,
"Oh my God."
Although it is a pretty popular cult film, well, it has its fans.
It's entertaining for how bad it is, though it seems like it runs really long.
Yeah.
But you've got the most god-awful Dracula you've ever seen. Then you've got the shrunken apple, big puffy potato head Frankenstein. I don't know. God, it's the worst Frankenstein I've ever seen, too.
Poor Lon Chaney Jr.
Oh, yeah. Who did not play the monster, but played the mute servant. Was it Groton?
Groton.
The mute axe murderer. You've got poor J. Carroll Nash playing the Dr. Frankenstein in the wheelchair. Every time he talked, his dentures that didn't fit right would click. Every time he would speak like that. And Angela Rosito, the midget.
Right.
Who was in tons of stuff back in the 70s. Then Regina Carroll, Russ Tamblyn.
Poor Russ Tamblyn.
And what's his name? The patriarch from Dallas. The father on Dallas plays a cop in it.
Is it Jim Davis?
Jim Davis, yeah. So, you know, it had a handful of people in the cast. But, oh man, it's bad. The poster art's great, though. And check the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. I'll be putting the poster art up and some good shots of Xandor Vorkov and John Bloom as Dragon. And Frankenstein. Oh, what about the Dracula ring, too? Remember the ring he wore in that?
No.
It's this big... I want to find this somewhere. I'll probably have to make it.
I've blinked out of my memory.
It's this god-awful, like, devil head ring that's as big as, like, half his finger. And the mouth is open. It's got horns coming off of it. And it's got one eye, like a cyclops. Like a marble or some glass eye in it. But he shot some kind of laser out of that. That was his... I don't know if that was what he hypnotized them with. Instead of his Dracula stare, he had a ring that shot a hypnotizing laser.
Because a Dracula stare might be a little much to ask out of Xandor.
Well,
unfortunately.
But this is the effects were so bad. It was like, you know, the old where they would scratch it on the film kind of effect.
Right.
But man, I want that ring.
So years later, and a shocking turn of events, I end up buying Dracula vs. Frankenstein on DVD. Now, this is what happens to you if you stay on this path too long. I'm talking about the cult movie path. Because you reach a point where you've seen all the classics and then all the almost classics. Then you get to the Midland quality stuff. Really, anything you might recommend to another human being, you've seen.
even recommend to an enemy.
And if you still have that craving, you want to see something you haven't seen before. Yeah. And then it's time to start watching some crap because it's all you've got left.
And there's plenty of it out of that era.
And sometimes it can be quite rewarding to dig into the seamy underbelly of the cult film. Seedy underbelly. There you go. So even though I had in fact seen it before, I decided, yeah, you know what? I need to watch some crap and it needs to be Dracula versus Frankenstein.
And were you rewarded?
Well, I was rewarded with a nice shiny disc with Dracula versus Frankenstein on it for my $17.99 or whatever it is I paid for.
Oh my God, you paid that much for it?
No, I didn't. Actually,
I got it for like $5.99.
I think it was $11.99 okay. on Amazon. It's a very high quality transfer.
Yeah.
It looks really good for Dracula versus Frankenstein.
Oh yeah.
The point is that I have become so corrupted over so many years of watching this crap that I actually sought out and chose to watch Dracula versus Frankenstein. And in the beginning, because I wanted crap, and this was precisely the crap I had prescribed for myself, for the first 20 minutes of the movie,
yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed it. But Dracula versus Frankenstein will test the patience of any man.
It is long.
Yeah.
Especially that, now I'm making air quotes with my fingers, the Vegas scene.
Yeah.
Where they show, you get some stock footage of Vegas, outdoor shots and stuff. But when they go into the showroom, the big room where she's supposed to be, Regina Carroll's doing her Vegas act, it is obviously a high school auditorium stage. Obvious. There's no mistaking it. And all it is the stage and a black curtain behind her and these two guys dancing, and they got the suitcases and she's singing this song. It is awful.
Now, that's a lead actress, Regina, or Regina.
Regina. Regina. Hey, that's a different movie, fella.
And I believe that was director Al Adamson's girlfriend.
Probably.
If we are to believe everything that we read.
Probably.
And that goes a long way to explaining why she was cast.
And that's horrible. That is probably the
lead
second,
in anyone's film.
The second worst scene in the film. The other worst scene is where she's going to find her sister. She goes to the boardwalk to where she eventually bumps into our story.
Right.
Somebody slips something, some acid or something in her drink in the bar, and she's dancing and she's hallucinating. That scene goes on forever.
One of several scenes that goes on forever. But that is the plot, right? She's looking for her missing sister.
Yeah.
And her missing sister fell afoul of J. Carroll Nash or Nate. Is it J. Carroll? Is it Nash or Nash? There's some things you read 1,000 times but never hear anybody say.
What's it? N-A-I-S-H,
which implies Nash.
Well, right? We'll go with that. It's our podcast. Screw it.
Hell with it. He's Nash.
That's right. He's Clinky Dentures. Yeah. Dr. Clinky Dentures.
Mr. Clinky Dentures.
Yes, I am Dr. Frankenstein.
So, the plot such as it is, Groton, and I believe he wields an axe, does he not?
Yeah.
Stumbles around on the beach with his axe, looking for fresh victims for Dr. Frankenstein.
Beautiful.
To fuel his experiments. And you know, if we have to explain what kind of experiments somebody with the Frankenstein name is performing, then you're listening to the wrong podcast. But yeah. And one of these axe murder victims was director Adamson's girlfriend's sister.
Yes. And
then somehow Dracula shows up. I don't remember. Is there a scene where Dracula...
At the beginning, I think. He digs the monster up.
There's no entree for him. He's already walking the earth. He doesn't need to be resurrected or anything.
No, he just shows up and pulls the monster out of the ground. Somewhere in America he was buried, actually. Then brings him to Dr. Frankenstein and wants him to help him revive him. So I guess they can take over the world.
Well, what else are you going to do with the damn thing?
I'm not going to run down the whole plot. Go buy the movie or at least rent it or borrow it.
No, just don't. Just take our word for it.
You can probably YouTube it. Anyway, you need to see
YouTube
it.
YouTube it. Do that.
Yeah. Or, hey, come over to my place. I'll watch it again. But you know, there's a lot of cool footage on the boardwalk and going at Dr. Frankenstein apparently runs a spook house freak show.
You and me got really different ideas of cool footage, sir.
Well, yeah, I'm a sucker for any of that freak show boardwalk, you know, sideshow stuff anyway.
Right, and J. Carroll, he runs some kind of...
That's what I said. It's kind of like the old spook show.
Right.
Or spook houses, where except you walk through this one.
But it's made of dead people.
Yeah.
House of Wax style.
And Angela Rosito is the talker at the, you know, getting people to come in. And Russ Tamlin as the biker and the guy that's with him. What the hell are they doing in the movie? They don't really serve any purpose in the film, do they? That I can remember.
I think Tamlin did a biker movie with Adamson, is that right?
Probably. Adamson did a ton of stuff. There's a book, I think it's called Schlockorama.
Yeah.
The Films of Al Adamson. You definitely need to, I got to bring that over to you when I finish reading it. It's really good, really in-depth, and if anybody's interested in Adamson's career or films, look for that book, Schlockorama. I got it at a convention. I don't know if it's available on Amazon or not.
One of these days, what I need to do is look into, do some research and figure out whatever the hell happened to Russ Tamblyn, right? Seriously, because he started out with a reasonably promising career
in
Hollywood. He starred in West Side Story.
Yeah, West Side Story.
Right? And he's good in it.
Yeah. I can tell you one of his last films.
What's that?
Cabin Boy.
Oh, God.
With what's his name?
You could have not told me that.
Yeah. He plays a merman. Yes, he does.
Yes, the whatever happened to Russ Tamblyn. So yeah, he's in some A pictures, right? And
yeah.
Then there's a great Jack Arnold juvenile delinquent movie called High School Confidential. Have you seen this?
Oh no, I haven't.
Oh God, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite movies.
Heard about it for years though.
Of its type, it's probably my favorite movie of its type. I mean, I have a little bit of a thing for the juvenile delinquent.
Yeah. Well, you have it, right?
Yeah, I do. We'll
okay,
watch it.
Cool.
If you're familiar at all with the White Zombie album, Los Exorcisto.
Yeah.
There's a couple of movies that provide a lot of samples. I mean, there's samples from all different things over the course of the album, because that's Rob Zombie's thing, right? But
yeah.
There's a couple of movies that get quoted over and over again. One of them, of course, is Faster and Pussycat Kill Kill.
Yeah.
And the other one is High School Confidential. High School Confidential is probably less known nowadays than Faster Pussycat is, so it's one of the ones that people don't often recognize the quotes from. But the great thing about High School Confidential, anything that Jack Arnold, of course, directed Creature from the Black Lagoon and King from Outer Space.
Yeah.
He worked in genre and he worked in B movies, but he made many of the best movies within the category he was working in. You know what I mean? Of whatever Universal International was doing in the 50s, no one's going to argue that Creature's the best one, right? So of the juvenile delinquent genre, High School Confidential is one of the very best ones in terms in all terms, really. But one of the great things about it, aside from Jack Arnold always managing to make something coherent out of his material, it's got all this just fantastic jive talking.
Yeah.
And
the Hepcats were talking back then.
Oh, God, it's so awesome. I can't even. Yeah. So if I'm not too lazy, I'll try to come up with some sound bites
to
cut into the podcast. But if I am too lazy, maybe we'll just look on YouTube and post something on the Facebook page.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So High School Confidential, and then I kind of lose track of him. But in the 60s, he starts showing up in Toho movies, or at least one, because he's in War of the Gargantuas.
Oh, that's right.
And now he's got his little afro, which he'll now have, you know, for however long, I guess for the rest of his career, because in Twin Peaks, he's essentially still got it, or
wow,
a perm version of it anyway. And then while I've been running my mouth about Russ Tamblyn, I have in fact looked him up on IMDb and confirmed that yes, in fact, he made a movie called Satan Sadists.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah,
with Al Adamson. Now, if I remember correctly, Dracula versus Frankenstein was actually made over the course of a couple or a few years, right? It wasn't. It was one of those things where the financing wasn't there.
Yeah.
So they'd make a little bit of it here and a little bit of it there. And that's probably how Tamblyn, complete with Biker Gang from Satan Sadists, shows up in it. Probably some...
Just a trade on his name, really.
Or probably some crossover in the shooting schedules. I don't know if they shot some of Dracula versus Frankenstein while they were making Sadist. That's pure speculation. I'm not sure. But he probably shows up complete with Satan Sadist costume and the whole bit. We'll have to sit down and suffer through Satan Sadist to confirm.
Oh, I'm all about that. Yeah. I love the satanic 70s movies, man.
Anyway, we now complete my Russ Tamblyn digression.
Phantasmo After Dark's tribute to Russ Tamblyn. We hardly knew ye. But hey, getting back to Dracula versus Frankenstein,
right?
You know, it's one of those films that is so, it is awful, it is bad, but I love it. It's one of those I'll watch again and again, not real close together. It's fun if you can sit through those long parts. I mean, it's a great bathroom break anyway.
I just remember there being just endless close-ups of Xandor Vorkoff as Afro Dracula,
but those are the best parts.
Just talking and talking and you know, we refer to him as Xandor
with his electronic voice.
Right, they process his, and is it even him, or had they overdubbed him?
It's probably him, just through some filter thing or something.
But they put an echo,
on
his voice for every line for the entire movie.
Yeah,
so it sounds
kind of like Gene Simmons in Kiss Me, He's a Fan of the Park.
So his voice sounds, you know, as overdubbing often does, disconnected from everything that's going on, and it has this echo chamber effect on it. And it's hilarious at first, but it gets incredibly irritating after a while.
Yeah, but you do get the big monster battle at the end, where, spoilers, Dracula rips the Frankenstein monster's head clean off his body.
His stuffed straw potato head.
Yeah, his foam puffy face. He just rips it off his body, and then of course Dracula gets killed by sunlight, and all that's left is his ring.
So here's me. I've ordered Dracula versus Frankenstein on DVD from Amazon, and I'm really excited to
and
see.
That was your first mistake,
because this is the mood that I'm in. I'm going to watch some not just Dracula versus Frankenstein, sir. I'm going to learn about this Al Adamson cat. That's what I'm going to do. He's notorious in these cult film circles, mm-hmm. and I'm going to get down with that catalog and see what's going on in the world of Al Adamson. So I've ordered it from Amazon. I got the Prime. It's going to take 2 days. I'm excited. I'm so excited that I decide, just one is not enough. I got to have something lined up to watch next.
What'd you get?
After, well, this is where you come in again, because this is the point at which I text you and say, I got to have some crap. Loan me your copy of Werewolves on Wheels.
And you're welcome.
Because I had never seen Werewolves on Wheels, and I knew that you, being the werewolf guy...
That's me.
...had a copy of Werewolves.
As soon as it got released, I tracked it down and found it.
Now, I've just provided us an excellent segue into discussing...
That was beautiful.
Wasn't it?
That was... Wait, hold on. Let me stand up. Wait a minute.
Thank you. But I should have asked before I segued, are we done with...
No, that's good. No, keep it rolling. This is good stuff. Man, that was almost professional segue.
Anything else to say about Dracula?
We'll come back to it if we do.
Okay. Before he is in it, by the way, we should point that out. The scene he's in is completely incoherent. So
has nothing to do really with the rest of the film. They just kind of stuck it in there, and
it doesn't even make sense.
You could cut it out and not
within
lose
itself.
Damn thing.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
But you get Fari and Two Monsters. So it's a great photo op for Fari.
So I'm wasting the excellent segue.
But it was a good segue
into Werewolves.
Werewolves
on Wheels.
On Wheels, yeah. Another great drive-in film.
Yeah. And it took me. Okay, this was last year sometime.
Yeah.
I just gave you your copy of Werewolves on Wheels back.
Yeah, you did. And I didn't realize it was gone.
Because I only watched it 2 weeks ago. Because I was so damaged from Dracula versus Frankenstein that I could not sit down to watch Werewolves on Wheels.
I'm sorry.
I had to watch like 10 hours of Bergman films and shit before to heal from Dracula versus Frankenstein.
Man, just about half hour porn would have done that.
But finally, I watched Werewolves on Wheels. And to my surprise, I enjoyed it immensely.
I'm surprised, too.
I started aggravating you about watching it again, and that brings us to now.
And watch it again, I did.
Yeah.
Werewolf film, I'm in, regardless. You got me at werewolf,
mm-hmm.
so I'm in. Then you add Werewolves on Wheels. You got werewolves and bikers. Not that I'm a big biker enthusiast, but biker films are from the 70s are cool, you know,
right.
They're fun. Anything from that era, 70s grindhouse, drive-in era, I'm a sucker for. I'll watch it. Love those movies. And then you throw, this movie it's three different genres mixed together. You've got werewolves, motorcycle, biker films, and then Satanist films, 70s Satanist films.
So let's count werewolf.
Werewolf.
Biker.
Satan.
Gay romance,
yes. We didn't mention that. Haha, surprise. That's the odd thing about this film. In first viewing of it, it was there. I saw it, didn't pay much attention to it, because it's like, bikers, whatever. But after you watched it and we talked about it more, it's like, man, it's blatantly obvious now. The gay subtext between Adam, who's the leader of the bikers, the first guy, the first man, and Tarot, not Tarot.
Even though it is Tarot.
Yeah.
But they say...
They call him Tarot because he reads tarot cards. They all have cool nicknames, like the one guy is called Movie because he does impressions of John Wayne and other actors and stuff. I don't know why the other guy's called Mouse.
Yeah, and I don't remember what any of the other quirky nicknames are.
But that's actually Bud from Father Knows Best played Mouse.
Sure it is.
It is. And he was the kid in Day the Earth Stood Still. I can't remember the actor's name right now, but yeah, it was Bud from Father
Another
Knows Best.
Another highly unfortunate career trajectory.
And cocaine's a hell of a drug. But you've got the werewolf, which you don't see until the last 5-10 minutes of the film. The Satanist, you do get into that pretty quick, and the hints at the gay subtext starts off almost right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Close to the beginning of the scene where they chase down the guys that ran them off the road. And as soon as they pull the guy out of the cab, Adam plants one right on him. And that's to humiliate him, and you don't think much of it. But as it goes on...
Yeah, at first you just take it as... I mean, you don't think anything about it. It's just a humiliation. My gang has got a hold of you. You can't move. I'm going to grab you and count and plant one on you to embarrass you.
And, in front of everybody and your friend there. You know. And they proceed to, you know, kick the shit out of this guy.
And you don't, again, take it as anything other than that until you begin to realize over time that Tarot is clearly in love with Adam.
Well, he has the jilted lover complex. Right. Because he's always copping an attitude.
Right off the bat.
What's his first line when the girl comes up and says, "Read my cards.
I don't read for chicks." Isn't that what he says?
Yeah. And there's a lot of hostility in
the girl
chicks.
Is Adam's girlfriend.
Yeah.
He's hostile to Adam's girlfriend. He's introduced, and then moments later... He's hostile
from,
to the girlfriend.
From the get-go.
Who has just been introduced. I mean, there's nothing she has done to deserve this, and nothing that she will do over the course of the film to deserve this. But he's pissed at her for some reason. He doesn't like her at all. And as we go along, Adam is aware of this. He knows that for whatever reason, Taro's got issues with the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And he seems to be trying in his own way to sort of console or comfort Taro, or at least bring him back around to, you know, to the fold.
At different points in the film.
Right, right.
Throughout the film. Oh, one thing I've got to add in, too. Big difference between Werewolves on Wheels and Dracula vs. Frankenstein.
Severn Darden.
Well, there's that. There's nobody compares to Severn Darden in the
Never, film. Ever will be.
But in Dracula vs. Frankenstein, one thing that makes it so slow as opposed to Werewolves on Wheels has two bare tit shots in it. Two scenes. Where Dracula vs. Frankenstein doesn't even have that to keep your attention.
Regina Carroll couldn't even be bothered. You know?
No.
I mean, was that too much to ask? You're the director's girlfriend. He could have talked her into it.
You would think. But you get one at the when they go into the bar. And, of course, when the Satanists have kidnapped Eve, I'll call her, Adam's girlfriend. and she's doing the naked Satan dance holding the skull.
Naked Satan dance.
Which is suspiciously like the rock dance from Lost Skeleton of Cadaver. I mean, it's almost exact the way she's moving. They had to have seen this. Blamire had to have seen this film to get those moves.
Cop some choreography from
Werewolves
on Wheels.
That's right. And if you're going to cop some choreography...
Make it Werewolves on
Wheels.
That's
right.
So, you take one thing away from this podcast, it's that. If you're going to steal choreography, steal it from Werewolves on Wheels.
That's right. Now, later on in the film, with Tarot, where they have the conversation, isn't that where they're sitting on top of the hill and Tarot is doing his meditation and Adam comes up and like sits kind of half beside him and half behind him?
For a second there I was confused, but yeah, that's it. I mean, we're zeroing in on the romance. Forget about the devil rituals and the werewolves.
Well,
we want to know about the relationship.
Let's finish that conversation.
I don't disagree. We want to know about the relationship between Tarot and Adam. That's what's important here. Please continue.
In this scene, he comes up behind him and starts talking to Tarot as, well, you know, hey, baby, let's go, you know, we can go back to Florida and remember when we went down there and saw so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. And Tarot's like, kind of like trying to ignore him, not having any of it. And Adam ends up grabbing it. It's getting in front of him somehow, almost on his lap, putting his arms around him. And they roll down the hill, like locked arm in arm.
Yeah.
And all we need is that nice romantic music playing. But before he goes down the hill, see, you're getting ready. You want me to say it. Adam says, two teddy bears rolling down the hill, man. Bears. Yeah. Rolling down a mountain,
that's
arm in arm.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah. But anyway. There's one more scene later in the film where they're keeping watch now after they've had their first animal attack. I did more air quotes with my fingers there. And Tarot is on watch, and the one guy gets out of the van after he's been with the two women that travel with him. And he goes over and says something like, why don't you go in the van? Tarot says, I don't like chicks.
That's right.
So it's starting to cement that subtext in, where it's not really subtext anymore.
So another member of the gang that night is killed by the werewolf because the guy that was supposed to be on lookout is busy with a couple of chicks.
Now, you brought up a point a little while ago where you were talking about the role that the women in the biker gang play. It's really interesting. There's four of them. There's the two that drive the truck that we don't see a whole lot that carry their gear and stuff. And then there's Adam's girlfriend, and there's one other biker chick that's riding with one of them. What were you saying about that?
Well, the function of the women in the movie is pretty much entirely just to lead men astray into danger and death, basically, right? Because we'll just cut right to the chase. Taro takes the gang out to see something really scary, so to speak. There's a satanic ritual. Mm-hmm. Adam's girlfriend gets caught up in the ritual. She is, as far as we can tell, it's never completely explained. As far as we can tell, she's the werewolf. She bites Adam and makes him a werewolf. Now, they are the werewolves. There's two of them. This isn't
actually the title, Werewolves,
of the movie. Yeah. But in the same night, during the same time period that werewolf girlfriend is leading Adam off so she can bite him, or leading him off to have sex and just happens to bite him. We can't speak to her intentions at this time.
It's not made clear to us at all with watching the film that she knows anything about.
What is her motivation? We have no idea.
She doesn't know she's a werewolf.
They're making out. Yeah. She bites Adam, setting him up for tragedy. At the same time, the other more prominent young lady in the biker gang, as opposed to the two who are just in the van that we never see much of, is leading another male member of the gang out into the wilderness, basically making him chase her so that they can eventually make out. And they are killed. They are the first people we actually see killed by the werewolf.
The same night. Now, Adam has just gotten bit.
Right.
And all of a sudden, these two werewolves come upon these two other people doing grown-up things out in the woods.
Right.
And all you see is a werewolf hand or werewolf glove, like, rake across their throat, and you see the blood fly, and that's it. That's all we see of the werewolves is just the hand.
Later, getting back to where we had left off, Movie is killed because the gentleman that was supposed to be on watch was led into the van to have sex with the two girls in the van, and nobody was around to protect poor Movie, and he gets eaten thrown on the fire, and it's just an awful tragedy.
At this point, we see the werewolf from the back, full body shot, pick up Movie and throw him on the bonfire, but we don't see the face. We don't see that it's a werewolf really yet.
Yeah, you're not going to see the werewolf until the very end of the movie. And I knew that going in. I think that's one of the things. If you're into monsters and you sit down to watch this, you know, looking for a werewolf on wheels, and why wouldn't you be looking for a werewolf on wheels? Because
hence the title.
Right. You're probably going to be pretty frustrated that you don't see much werewolf until the very end. You get a lot of pastoral, biker, Satanist, jive-talking, desert-riding, folk-singing stuff.
Oh, God, the incidental music's horrible in this thing, too. Good God.
Until you finally get some werewolves. But I knew that going in, and I was prepared to wait.
Yeah.
And just sort of see what else was going on in the interim. So that might have helped an awful lot with my processing.
Once you do see the werewolf, it's not bad makeup for what it is, you know.
Right.
You don't get a transformation, really, or anything. But it's like all of a sudden, there's the werewolf. And when he finally gets on the motorcycle.
When the werewolf is finally on wheels.
Yeah. It's shot so dark. You don't get a good beauty shot of a werewolf riding a motorcycle, which would have been awesome.
That might be a good thing. We might be grateful if we got a really well-lit werewolf on wheels. We might have said, ooh, they should have shot that darker.
Well,
you know what I mean?
A good establishing iconic shot would have been cool, you know? But you don't get that. And then all of a sudden, they chase after him, catch him on fire with the spoilers, catch him on fire with a torch, and he crashes and burns, baby, you know, and he goes off and dead. When you do see the werewolf on wheels, you don't get it for less than a minute, really?
No.
Go back and look at the poster. And the poster's great. Poster's fantastic. If the title doesn't draw you in, the poster's going to do it, just like Dracula vs. Frankenstein.
So in a sense, Werewolves on Wheels is almost a perfect exploitation movie. Great poster.
Yeah, great poster. Great title.
Great trailer.
Great trailer.
Not a great movie, but entertaining.
No. And you've got nudity. A scant bit of nudity. A little bit of nudity in it, which good grindhouse cult film like that era should have in it.
The action's a bit lacking.
The pacing it slows down at a couple points.
But folk music is outstanding.
Oh my God, it's awful. But if you can get past that, it's kind of a fun film. The Satanic Ritual, like you were saying, kind of seems to go on a little bit, but it's cool. I mean, you get to see Severn Darden chew a little scenery with the monologue there. And the cool prop thing in it, the belt buckle, it's the pentagram, and when they go at the one point before they get the girl, the monks take a bit of her hair, and he lifts up the pentagram and there's a little compartment, puts it in there and folds it back down. I want to know where that prop is.
That would be the evil devil monks.
The evil devil monks.
Of whom Severn Darden is the leader.
Yeah, he is the one. Mm. Which, this is interesting, it's like, why is he the one and why is Adam? Was Adam's name consciously, did they just pull the name out of thin air? Or did they name him Adam because Adam was the first man? Well, come to find out at the end of the movie, the bikers end up becoming the monks. And to see how this all happens, get the movie and watch it. But at the very end, you see Adam from the nose down talking about he is the one, and it comes full circle.
Full circle. Thinking about it more, I would say you're probably right that was a thoughtful move on their part, because the movie does have aspirations to art in places, I would say. I mean, just in terms of the way that it's shot, which is not always entirely gorgeous, but often interesting and certainly thoughtful. It's surrealistic touches.
Yeah.
The aforementioned satanic ritual starring Severin Darden, which goes on way too long, but has some interesting images in it, some images that are sort of echoed and repeated throughout mm-hmm. the movie and then in the climax and all that. So why don't you describe the ending with the...
Oh, the end, yeah.
Big switcheroo.
That's kind of cool because it's kind. I guess it's one of those things... Well, I didn't see it coming. I probably should have. Because earlier in the film, when the bikers break in to the monastery to save the girl, they start to fight the monks. The monks aren't fighting back, but quite a few of them, they mark the bikers. They rub, slap their hands across their faces or rub their hands across the bikers' faces, and it leaves a mark of blood that I guess they had on their hands. Well, at the end of the film, what's left of the bikers that hasn't been killed by the werewolves, they break back into the monastery and they're going to take their revenge on the monks. And when they break in, they draw back their crowbar, plank of wood or whatever they've got. They turn the monk around and you see the monk's face. It's one of the bikers that have been killed already. And it happens one by one. They do that and they see each biker and they like slowly drop their weapon in their hand. And then you see Adam from his girlfriend behind him in a white dress with soot. All the monks have, like, their faces are dark, like soot or makeup or something. And then you see Adam, just his mouth, like, from the nose down, reciting the line. And it's one of those downer endings that a lot of these films had, or the huh? kind of ending, you know, had at this particular time. And especially a lot of the Satan films ended like that, did not have an ending where everything came out okay.
Why? Because Satan.
Because Satan. Oh, God, what's one of my favorites? Race with the Devil. Warren Oates, Peter Fonda, Loretta Swit. Same type of
You
ending.
Had me at Loretta Swit.
Oh, dude, great. We're going to talk about that one, too. And one of these podcasts, we're going to sit down and watch it. We're going to have a double feature Satan podcast, and that's going to be one we're going to talk about.
With Devil's Reign?
Perfect.
Stay tuned for a future episode.
Don't know if I have that.
Dark.
We'll get it. We're going to watch it. But anyway, getting
Ernest
back
Borgnine.
To this. Ernest Borgnine? Is that what we're going to do?
Only after we do our tribute to Russ Tim.
Didn't we just do that about 10 minutes ago?
It wasn't adequate. That was prelude to a tribute to Russ Tim.
Prelude to a tribute. Werewolves on Wheels. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about that, I don't think.
Werewolves.
Werewolves.
Bikers.
Bikers. Satanist.
Satan. Gay romance.
Gay romance. Dracula vs. Frankenstein doesn't have any of that.
No.
And it's a lot, I'll say, harder to watch. It seems like it's a lot longer. What's the running time on both of those? Do you know? Werewolves on Wheels, what did we say? It was like 85 minutes?
You should ask that question longer.
Well, I'll just talk while you're looking it up.
To cover the time I'm looking it up. And then it won't sound yeah. like I
Werewolves
looked it
on Wheels,
it's
even
like,
though...
It's like, I know.
Even though it does have a few long stretches that seem like they drag, it's only 85 minutes, the film, in its entirety. Dracula vs. Frankenstein, which we're going to find out in just a moment how long that actually is. Seems like it goes on for a couple of days at
They're
some point.
They're 5 minutes difference.
Really?
90 minutes versus
Holy crap.
85 for Werewolves on Wheels.
That's a long damn 5 minutes. Because there's two Regina Carroll scenes are the ones that are the longest in it. The dance, the LSD dance, and the Vegas the high school auditorium lounge act. You've got to see it to believe it. What year was Dracula vs. Frankenstein?
1971.
71, same year. As Werewolves on Wheels.
You are correct.
Wow. Cranking them out.
It was a banner year in film land.
Cranking them out. Definitely, though, I'll bring this book over to you when I finish it, but anybody out there is interested in Al Adamson stuff, you got to find this book, Schlockerama, The Films of Al Adamson. It's a fantastic book. Highly recommended. A lot of stuff in it I did not know, and a lot of great pictures. Look for it on Amazon, kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that.
Dracula versus Frankenstein.
Werewolves on Wheels. Be putting pictures up on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page soon. And if you want us to hear us talk about anything or want to make any comments or anything, you can do it there or at our email address, which is
phantasmopod@gmail.com.
All right. Well, that's it for me, Rob Floyd, and Tony Mercer. We'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.